Three, two, one. And we're back.
And we're back again.
The weekly update, ladies and gentlemen.
Weekly update. Well, I mean, so, excuse the giant pink shade behind me if you're watching this. That it's pretty bright out and we had to find something to throw over the window.
So it didn't burn your eyeballs out.
Yeah, we were watching this. Anyway, I just want to talk about, I felt like, so we have been doing the podcast for maybe
two or three weeks.
And it seems like it's going over pretty well, which is awesome.
Yeah, getting a little bit of traction.
Yeah, so thank you for everyone that's listening or watching. It's, you know, we appreciate it. And as far as the season goes, for me, is definitely over. I mean, we talked about that in the last podcast.
Which actually is coming out next week.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But, yes, we but talked yes. about it.
So we talked about, I guess I can go a little bit into that, just as far as, like, I fished a little bit around here. And I pretty much lost him around the beginning of November. And so it was just, yeah. And then I like went to the Cape and I caught a school year too. And then I came back because, like, you know.
Yeah.
And so it's one of those things that's like, okay, now what? So I guess now it's the off season.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm already itching for next season. And of course, it just ended. And there's still people in New Jersey who are killing it right now, in New York for that matter, pretty much. Yeah, we're the it's been pretty interesting. I've been like trying to figure out like, okay, now what? Okay, it's the off season, and then you think about, okay, now, and then I realize all the stuff I need to do. Like, I'm sure a lot of you guys out there have so many hooks and stuff that need to be replaced and gear that needs to be washed or sent back to get like fixed, repaired and whatnot. Yeah, so that's pretty much where I'm at right now with everybody that's doing that. Yeah,
but what are your sort of like you said, gear related stuff, but what are your sort of goals and, or not goals, but like, what do you do, I guess, like in the off season when, I mean, obviously you can repair stuff and whatnot, yeah, but yeah. Do you have any things that you now have time to do that you didn't have time to do in the fishing season that are related to fishing, you know?
Yeah. So generally what I do now is I organize my gear, and everybody knows once the season starts, you don't organize your gear. I mean, it just is insane. I mean, but I do have to say, something that's really cool that I figured out, by talking to some people at the tackle store, if you take a milk crate,
mm-hmm.
and you put tennis ball tubes in the milk crate, they fit perfectly in a milk crate. So you can organize your lures in those, which is awesome because it's easily portable and you can stack it too for like, to make it,
Easier storage.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. So it's easier to store it.
It's like a low budget, good quality storage option.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it is a low budget, good quality storage option.
Mm-hmm.
And it's awesome. And you can generally go to like a country club near you which has like tennis. And if you like ask, they'll give you like empty tennis ball tubes. Like I went to this country club.
I don't know.
And so I just pulled up there, and they had it was outside this huge bubble, like tennis, like court bubble. And there was, you know, probably 8 foot high boxes just covered, like from that whole outside section behind it. And it was like, it was just like
a mountain of them. Yeah,
and I just grabbed 2 boxes, threw them in the back of the car. I mean, there's ones that the boxes were like rotting because they'd been there for so long.
Wow.
So they didn't need them.
Yeah.
So we just took them.
Wow.
Just took 2. So, yeah. And that's what I'm saying. Like, and I'm sure you can go and ask people for them, and I'm guarantee. Yeah. Or if you do play tennis and you're lucky enough to have them yourself, and so I just fill it up. That's, yeah. And I in a milk crate.
Yeah.
The hardest part is finding a milk crate. And it's...
You could buy one at, like, Target or whatever, yeah, like, or Staples or whatever, mm-hmm, for pretty cheap. But I bet you could also go to a grocery store or some sort of place, yeah, that's getting, like, packages of, yeah, stuff and ask if they have any, like, mm-hmm, old milk crates or spare milk crates or crates that they're not using, yeah, anymore.
I've seen people, it's like you take them, there's like the signs that say, do not take it.
Yeah.
So just be careful. I've seen people just take it with no repercussion.
Yeah.
Where did I get mine? I think we just had them in the house, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. They're probably, yeah, left over from storage for something.
But... Yeah. So I just filled the milk crate up with it and it's awesome.
Yeah.
That's like a tip. That's awesome. I never knew about that, and it's perfect. It's like the tubes for like a plug bag.
Mm-hmm.
It's really sick.
Yeah.
So generally what I'll do is I'll get like one and I'll fill it with like pencil poppers in like, or just topwater lures.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll get another one. I'll fill it with like diving, swimming lures.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll just fill up. I need to get more. I have one now. I have plenty of tubes. But I need to get more because, yeah, I have way too many plugs.
Yeah.
And I need to store way too many plugs. Especially because if we're going to be moving into that fishing shack,
yeah,
there. So, yeah, I'm excited. Some cool things are going to happen. The podcast will change its setup at some point.
At some point, we'll be in a
very cool fishing shed.
Shack. Situation.
Which is going to be so sick.
Yeah. We can do a whole...
But we could literally do it. I mean, it might be done within the next...
Yeah.
2 months or a month.
Yeah.
Literally. We'll see. So it's going to be cool. Anyway.
You set up organization stuff for your gear and that, mm-hmm, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And anything else?
So gear organization is key because that's something I do. The other thing I do a lot of... is I tie leaders in the like winter. The thing is about tying leaders in the winter is you want to do it, and this is a tip, and I guess a lot of people are gonna be like, yeah, my knots are gonna be fine, but it is like a learning curve again when you start tying knots. And I guess the knots that I tie, I can show. Hold on, I have stuff right there.
You were also talking about how, like, in the future, or, like, coming up, like, soon you want to start doing, like, videos, like, short, like, instructional videos, oh, yeah, and posting a little bit on Instagram and some more on the YouTube channel,
yeah,
that are not related to the podcast necessarily, no, but just cover little things like this, like tying knots.
Tying knots.
Like, setting up little pieces of gear and, like, whatever it is.
I guess this will be able to go over...
We could make another video of this, but...
Exactly what I use. But I use this. It's Blue Label 60-pound cigar.
For those on the YouTube watching.
Yeah. It's fluorocarbon. And it is... Oh, actually. That's a lie. There's a scissor right beside you, Ben.
Yeah.
I'll just go quickly over, and if you're listening to it... you can either look these knots up anywhere because, mm-hmm, they're pretty much everywhere. They're, yeah, probably... All right, this is only... I tie different knots with braid, but for monofilament and fluorocarbon, this is the knot I tie. And I have had it slip and break before, but it's generally human error.
Yeah.
When that happens. If you tie a good knot, and now I'm going to, like, because I'm being filmed, I'm going to botch it. But...
yeah, but so, here goes nothing.
Yeah, exactly. So I tie the improved clench knot. And I really don't think it's a rocket science, honestly, when it comes to tying knots. People say, oh, you have to count, you only do a certain amount of twists. It doesn't really matter. It's not a rocket science. If it holds, it holds. Generally, even though fluorocarbon is harder to tie than monofilament.
Just because it's not flexible.
Yeah, it's just a stiffer... Yeah. Thing. It's a short leader, but whatever. So generally I tie my leaders, this is like on the small end, but the reason I use a leader in general,
how long are they usually for you? That one's about what?
This is probably 3 feet.
Yeah.
And or it will be less once I like tie it up.
Yeah.
But this is just for demonstration purposes. Yeah. Generally, when I tie a leader, I'll have a 4 foot leader, about 3.5 to 4 foot leader. And the reason I use either fluorocarbon or monofilament is, and not just straight braid, which I would use straight braid if I could, but the reason that I do it is when you're fishing on the rocks and you have to grab your leader, if it's braided line and you're pulling a fish that is pretty big, you're like trying to pull it up onto the rock, it is going to slice right through your hand.
Mm-hmm.
9 out of 10 times. I mean, you'd have be, and that's why a lot of guys wear gloves. I should probably get into wearing gloves. I do have gloves, but the thing is, I feel like when it's like hot out, I also feel like a wimp when you wear gloves. Not gonna lie, but I should probably wear gloves because I get absolutely beat up by the big fish. I mean, my hands look like they're like I have so many scars from. Now I'm just gonna complain. Everybody's gonna be making fun of me, but I just get when, especially if a bass gets hooked further back in their mouth and you reach into their mouth to unhook it. If you're fishing with like with eels, you know, they have these giant like spiny plates in the back of their mouth right before their stomach, and they can crush your hand with them. I mean, next time you catch a bass, look back in there. They're kind of
again,
a yellowish
color.
Again, this
has to be a bass large. Well, yeah. I mean, it's in all bass, but it has to be large enough where you can shove your whole arm down there.
Yeah, so pretty much I shove my whole arm into their mouth, and then they clamp down, and sometimes they'll roll and shake, and they just absolutely shred your hands up. I mean, I've come back where my whole hand is just red and bleeding. It's awful. Okay, but when you grab line, you slice it really easily. So what you want to do is you want some sort of leader, because when you grab it, it won't slice your hand up.
Mm-hmm.
It might like constrict your hand, especially if the fish is pulling. So I would say make sure the fish is tired and controlled before you grab onto a leader, in general. But if you can grab onto the leader and wrap it around your hand a little bit and then just pull it up, generally you're fine onto where you're fishing. But I lost one of your fish right at the rock.
Yeah, we talked about that in the first podcast.
He hooked a... I'll just go over it briefly for those of you that haven't listened to it. He hooked... We were on a cliff face that was very steep. And it was like one of the first really... one of the first 40-pounders of the year. And he hooks into it. We went over the whole fight. So if you want to listen to that,
listen to Getting Hooked, the first podcast.
Yeah, because that was kind of my favorite podcast so far, just because I had told some stories in it.
Yeah.
And it was so much fun. I have a lot of stories. I need to get into telling more stories on the podcast.
Yeah, maybe we'll do that.
Because I have a lot of hilarious stories. He hooked a bass, got it up to the rock. We were kind of walking it back and forth across the rock, because we're trying to figure out how to land it, because there's giant waves, and it was like early spring, and yeah, it was probably June like 5th or 6th. You know, it was 2 days after your first one, which is incredible. The first two times I brought him out, he caught the only bass that he caught, he didn't catch a bass smaller than 43 inches.
All season.
Until
the last day that I went out with you.
Yeah, until the last day he went out with me.
He caught a bunch of schoolies. 15 fish.
But he caught so many, like, absolutely massive bass. It was just ridiculous. So I go down to land this 40-pound bass, and I first just touch the fish, just say, okay, we landed it. It's a caught fish. But I was, like, hanging on for dear life. And I wrap my hand around the leader, and I'm pulling it up, and I see the hook, it's like right in the top of its mouth, and it shakes, and the hook just flips out.
Yeah.
And the fish just slides back into the water, and a huge wave just goes boom and just like smashes into me. And I should have dove into the water after it, but I was wearing waders, so I don't know how smart that would have been. But that one still hurts me.
Yeah.
But it technically was a caught fish, but it still hurts me. Okay, back into tying knots. So I tie improved clench knots. So I use just a normal, like,
there's no way this is going to come out on film, but whatever.
Yeah, it's fine. But
I'll see if I can describe it.
Is
you go through the eye of the
hook,
the hook or whatever you're tying it to.
You wrap it around.
Wrap it around itself
like 3 or 4 times.
Wrap the tag end around.
And this
the
is
main
for
line.
60. This is for 60-pound fluorocarbon, by the way. This is like
60-pound fluorocarbon. You wrap the tag end around the main line like
three or four
times.
Yeah.
Then go back through the loop that's at the base, right by where it's attached.
Yeah. So I don't know if you guys are gonna be able to see that, but so there's a loop that's created by the knot, and I put this tag through that loop. And then I'm going to make a video about how to do this and how I tie all my knots. And then that makes a loop, and then you put it
back through
the larger loop
with a braid border on it. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So then what you do is you wet it so that the knot doesn't like burn.
Cause there's a lot of friction when you tighten it down.
And then you tighten your knot. That was actually not bad. And then
snip the excess.
Yeah. And then you snip the excess. That was actually a really good knot.
Look at that.
I thought I was going to...
It's like you've done it before.
I know. Well, I was worried that I was just going to screw the knot up completely. I like to leave a little tag just because... you snip off the tag, and I don't know if you guys on the podcast will be able to see any of this. Probably not.
You can get even closer if you want.
Okay, I'm getting up close and personal with the podcast.
I think it's on autofocus. Wait, there it is.
I don't know if you'll be able to see that.
Yeah, I think they can see it. It's focused.
Okay. So that's what it looks like when it's tied. And then I'll throw on the clips that everybody gives me so much crap about, and I don't blame them. I deserve it. I have these, like, tactical... I keep calling them tactical angler clips because that's, like, the staple name.
But
it's like Kleenex.
Yeah.
But it's a fishing quick clip that is made by Tsunami and is kind of... awful, but I like them because it's easier to put on the rod, the eye stem of your rod, which we went over in another podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So then I tie that around this. So same deal, 3 wraps around, through the eye, back through the knot, wet it, and tighten. And boom, another absolutely beautiful knot. Sometimes I'd have to retie my knots like 4 times. Look at that. That was 2 in a row. On the video podcast. The reason I'm freaking on the video podcast.
Sorry. We'll get some we'll get a knot video out there at some point.
Yeah, which is going to be hilarious because I'm, of course, going to have the hardest time tying good knots. But
there
I just tied a leader that I would be confident hooking into a 40-pound bass with.
Although it's a tad short,
but that doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
I don't think leaders matter in general for, like, fish.
Yeah.
Because I think if a fish is going to hit a plug... it's going to hit.
Yeah, the plug.
The plug, no matter what. So that's how I tie my leaders. That's a good leader. And I really like just, and again, having any sort of quick clip is super vital because you could be fishing one way and then something could happen, like a blitz, and you could be fishing a lure that just is not good for fishing a blitz, and then you want to switch it out quickly. And that's like a good way to... like increase your chances of catching fish in general. And then also if you, it just helps a lot. And I fight my fish with like an extraordinary amount of pressure, like more than average people do. And so I really, when I'm talking about testing gear, like I pretty much test the gear to the max on the fish that I fight with. So it's not like I'm just messing around, letting the fish run and tire itself out. I'm getting that fish in. So a lot of the gear that I use is going to be put to the, like, it's the limit.
You're going to know very quickly if it's going to hold up or not.
So people always laugh at me when I'm using like 65 pound or is it 60 pound
leaders,
but I don't want to go lighter. Like this is light for what I, in the middle of the season, this is light for what I use. Like I, in a perfect world, would use 80 pound fluorocarbon.
Yeah.
And people are going to be like, you don't, it's going to like ruin everything. But honestly, if there are giant fish around, I want to land them. I'm not messing around.
Yeah.
You know, if you guys want to mess around with your light line, go for it.
It's a free country.
Yeah, exactly. And again, everything that I'm saying is stuff that has worked for me. So you can either take it or leave it, but that's what I do.
We got about 10 minutes left.
Yeah, I guess we'll go into questions.
Do some questions. there's obviously some more stuff that you do in the off season, but we can talk about those in future weekly updates.
Yeah. So I'll just go to Instagram. I put out question like a thing on my story and for questions. So see, come on. No questions. Yeah, I just did it, so I'm not surprised.
Mm-hmm.
I think I had something. Okay.
So I
was just seeing somebody commented just on a post that I did.
Yeah.
So I was just seeing if it was a question. It wasn't. All right. So I have these two. I guess you don't need to do that one.
Yeah.
But I have this one. So.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna hand it to you so that you can read it off.
What's the biggest fish you've ever caught, and what kind was it?
Honestly,
ever caught.
Ever
not
caught.
Biggest striped bass.
Oh, okay. So the biggest fish I've ever caught is like a wahoo.
Yeah.
In Florida, it was giant. I think it was like a 60-inch wahoo.
Yeah,
it was huge.
Yeah,
that was the biggest fish I've ever caught. And then I'll go to my other one.
Yeah, I'm pretty good at fishing. Okay.
Okay.
And then this one.
He's surprisingly good. Anyway, no way he listens to the whole podcast. That'd be hilarious.
That would be hilarious. If you are listening now, Matt, congratulations. Okay. Then this one.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, podcasts are amazing, man. I love them. Thank you.
Yeah.
Question for you for the podcast or not? Well, here we go.
Yeah.
How do you overcome fishing for hours with no bite or hit? How do you keep yourself focused and in tune with what's happening?
Well, first of all, I will if it's like a question that is good or even like any question is good. So if you're DM me anything you have, and if you want it to be in the podcast, ask me for it to be in the podcast, because then it'll definitely end up in the podcast. So thank you for your question. This is a very good question, because when I first started out, I knew absolutely nothing. So I taught myself from the beginning how to fish. So basically, like, my dad knew.
Yeah, we went over the origin story in the first podcast.
But as far as like keeping yourself motivated to fish is difficult when you're not catching fish.
Now, and focused, too.
And focused. And the thing about fishing is, like, striped bass, if you're fishing during the day and you're catching, and you want to and you're satisfied with catching schoolie bass, then I think that the biggest key is to keep moving. Because
physically moving when you're on the shore.
Yeah, because, like, what happens is, no matter where you are, even if you're on a sandy beach or if you're on rocks or in an estuary or anything, the bass are going to be staged up in different spots. So what you want to do, and I'm the most impatient person ever. I hate waiting for long periods of time without hooking into a fish.
Yeah.
I pretty much will only fish like 25, 30 minutes in a spot before I'm like, okay, I need to move or make a change. Which people are going to be like, what? But like generally, if I'm not catching something in 30 minutes, I know I'm not going to be catching anything. Even though we have grinded it for 2 hours in a spot and hooked a 40-pound bass, but
yeah,
it very rarely happens that way, because I've grinded it for far longer and had nothing.
But so, also, like, two casts in and then there it goes.
Literally, yeah. I hooked one of my biggest fish of the entire season. I hooked the eel up, pitched it out just to make sure it wouldn't tangle up my line, reeled it in, casted it out, took two cranks, and I hooked a 40-pound bass.
Yeah.
Which is just insane.
Yeah.
So,
you'll fish a spot for a short period of time, and then if nothing happens in that short period of time, mm-hmm. and you try a couple of baits or whatever,
keep moving.
Then you're going to move to a new spot.
Yeah. But it's also like kind of my mentality in general is just being hyper-focused constantly when I'm fishing.
Yeah. I think for you, that's sort of a strength, but it's pretty impressive. From on the outside looking in, it's pretty impressive for you to like have that kind of focus, because it's not only like, you know, you're fishing once every couple of weeks or whatever, and so you can really like dial it in and mm-hmm. be focused for like 3 or 4 hours while you're out there fishing a spot. Mm-hmm. You literally are fishing 5 to 7 days a week for multiple hours every day.
Yeah.
And so you're out there and you bring that focus every single time.
Yeah.
Which is pretty insane. But I think mm-hmm. part of it is like your movement technique, where you're not just camping out in
exactly.
one place for 3 or 4 hours.
And that's the thing. It's like if you get on a bite and then it doesn't work, Again, I mean, there's difference between getting on a bike during a moon phase and then getting on a bike randomly during the week.
Mm-hmm.
That means it's especially, or like, and I'm saying randomly as in if it's like a, like
the wrong tide, the wrong whatever.
No. I'm saying like, okay, it's the right tide, the right wind, everything like that. And it's like, I don't know, like a waxing crescent, like something
random
moon phase that just has no correlation with being a good moon phase, and you get onto a bite, that means you're in a good spot and it's going to produce very like consistently well. Mm-hmm. So being able to do that means you're having doing well. But sometimes what will happen is you get in a bite like that and you'll fish that spot all year long and you'll get absolutely in, like you'll catch one 25 pound bass and then you won't deviate your like from your plan that's like, mm-hmm. I'm gonna fish the spot, I know there's big fish here.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you need to break the mold and figure something else out if it's not working. I was stuck doing that exact same thing where I fished a spot one year, I hooked and lost a 35 pound bass. We talked about that in the Origin Story podcast or whatever it's called.
It's getting hooked. It's the first getting one. Hooked.
And so we talked about that, and I fished that beach for 5 or 6 years with like nothing but schoolies and a couple of keepers. But and then just kept fishing there and got nothing. But the thing is about when you're first starting out and you want to just get on action, people are always like, oh, there's no more fish. I mean, it really depends on where you are. But you can be in a harbor. And we've had nights in harbors where you can get
decent fish.
I've hooked 30-pound bass I've hooked 30-inch bass in harbors. Yeah. I've seen 30-pound bass in harbors blitzing on adult bunker.
Yeah, it just depends on the time of year.
Everything depends on, like, it's, and what I'm trying to get at is there's a lot of, I'm going to say this and people are going to get mad at me. There are a lot of bass around.
Yeah.
In general. It might not be as much as there was at one point, but there are a lot of bass around. Now, it's just about putting yourself in the best position to hook into those fish.
Yeah.
Now, if you're saying, if you're getting skunked repeatedly every night, you need to flip 180 degrees what you're doing. So if you're fishing during the day at high tide and with a certain lure, and you're going out there and you're catching no fish day after day, then you need to completely flip it around. You need to either fish at night there, or you need to fish at low tide there, but you need to completely flip around what you're doing.
Major. Yeah.
And that's that's a big thing, because like, or there's just no bass there.
Mm-hmm.
So if you fish on sandy beaches, I don't like fishing on sandy beaches because I think that they change too much.
But regardless,
you can catch lots of schoolies on sandy beaches. I mean, I've fished on a beach that it's not very long, but it has a bunch of like sandy troughs going like rippling down the entire length of the beach. And in each trough, there's about 3 15-inch schoolie bass.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm going to take someone out that doesn't really know how to fish, and I know they're going to be super excited to catch...
Just to catch fish in general.
15, like 20-inch, or like less than 15 to 20-inch bass. And I'll walk them down the whole beach and I'll have them cast a bucktail or something into each spot, a soft plastic or something like that, and they'll catch fish.
Yeah, and just sort of keep moving.
Yeah, yeah. So, and we keep moving. That's the key.
Yeah.
Is fish a spot, get a couple schoolies, and eventually if you fish in one spot long enough, another school of bass will move in. But just keep moving in different locations.
So I think that, like, just to sort of sum it up, I think that if you're a beginner or you're at a new or in a, you're in a new location,
you can
correct me if I'm wrong here, mm-hmm. but if you're a beginner you're in a new location or both, you should focus on just covering ground,
mm-hmm.
and just casting as wide a net as you can, because you don't know which spot is going to produce the most fish.
Yes.
But if you start dialing a spot in,
mm-hmm.
that's when you can work different baits, different times of day, different whatever.
Yeah.
Like, to really try to hone in something you think is going to produce for a long period of time.
Yeah. And the thing about that is, a great search bait in general are pencil poppers.
Yeah.
Because you can throw a small pencil popper out there and you can generally get a bass to at least swirl on it.
Yeah.
So that gives a dead giveaway that there's a fish there. Then you can switch it up. Or if the bass will eat it most of the time. But if you're fishing a spot that's new, I don't care if it's flat, calm water or pretty choppy water, you throw a pencil out there and 9 out of 10 times you'll have a bass at least come up and hit it. And that will tell you that there's a fish there. Now, of course, like if you want to go narrow it in, you're fishing on it, there's different lures that you can, that will be more productive.
We could do a whole podcast about like what you would do, like approaching a new location.
Honestly,
you know?
Yeah, we could do that. And we could, and the other thing we could do is talk about what you should do if you're a beginner and you want to get catching more fish,
more fish and bigger fish.
I think that will be the next podcast that
should
we do.
That should be.
Because I feel like for me, that was the hardest thing for me to do is like watch, be on the internet and look at everybody's stuff and see that. Like, how are these people catching these big fish?
Yeah.
And then being like, I don't... And then believing that my spot and where I live didn't have big fish.
Which was just wasn't true.
Which is just wasn't true. Everywhere, and I don't... I hate when people are like, oh, and Rhode Island doesn't have any more big fish. Oh, whatever. New Jersey doesn't have any more big fish. And I know a lot of people are going to be like, what?
Yeah.
But, like, it's, like, so ridiculous when... people say that because there are, I don't care, there are 40 to 50 pound bass in all of those locations in places that are accessible from shore.
Mm-hmm.
It's just about putting the pieces together and catching the big fish. And now everybody's going to be like either with me or like saying there's no way.
Yeah.
But there definitely are, because there is a lot of really big fish out there, and not as much as there were, but there's enough that they move and they cover ground. Now, I've talked about different times of year to target those big fish or have your best shot, but I'm going to briefly say before we end this podcast, the bass migrate, which means that all of those 40, 50 pound bass, they move up and down the coast. Yeah. The ones that I'm catching now are probably in New Jersey right now.
Yeah,
they might be further offshore, but there are going to be bass that are closer into shore that you guys can catch. Now, that's the thing. Everybody's like, oh, there's not a lot of big fish around. I 100% agree with that. It's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying that there's guys that are way out offshore and trolling around, and they're catching 40-pound bass. Mm-hmm. And there's guys that are catching 40-pound bass in a foot of water.
Yeah.
So it's just like there are big fish around. You just need to figure out where they are in your area. And hopefully my techniques tweaked to your location will help, because what I found is where I fish at, there's like maybe two guys that are really, really good at what they do, and there are in that I know of that I guess are kind of online presences.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there's more, but I'm just saying this really loosely.
Yeah.
But there's nobody that was putting out videos about how to catch big fish in my area.
Yeah.
So, or anything really about it. And so I couldn't for the life of me figure out how to fish here.
Yeah.
So, but there's all sorts of different like articles online for most of everywhere, most of everywhere.
Yeah.
For everywhere that around on the coast that will tell you how to target big fish in your area.
Yeah.
So just do a little digging, and that really helps in a big way.
Okay. All right, we got to wrap this up.
Yeah.
But we got good ideas for future podcasts. And
yes.
Keep on listening. Mm-hmm. Look up for those. Those videos, short videos that might be coming out on Instagram and YouTube.
Yes.
Tutorials and whatnot.
Yeah, but it should be a while because I need
It'll be a while, of course.
It's
but
not going to be
It'll
like
happen eventually.
In the next week, put it
that
way.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.